Thank you very much for the invitation to come along today. I really appreciate the opportunity to come here to Budapest. As Mate said, I am working on a project about web accessibility and the overlap between web accessibility and older people, particular the overlapping impairments that we develop as we're aging with the disabilities that many people in the community already experience. So it's a fairly interesting project, and as Mate said, it's going to be more and more relevant as we progress forward from this point when we look at the demographic forecasts. Okay, so what I'm going to talk about this morning, just give a little bit of an introduction to what is web accessibility. I'm going to talk a little bit about the WAI guidelines because we've just reached a crucial point in the development of a new set of guidelines. So I'm going to talk about a bit about WCAG 2 and about older users on the web. Victor introduced the W3C, the consortium itself, so I won't dwell on this, but it is an international vendor organisation with, I think you said, 410 current members spread right around the world. And it's about making the web available to everyone, everywhere, on everything. And that is particularly important when we talk about people with disabilities because they are part of everyone. And they need to be included. The Web Accessibility Initiative is one of the technical programs within the World Wide Web Consortium, and it's primarily responsible for making sure that accessibility support is included in the W3C technology. So the HTML, the XML, the CSS, the SMILE multimedia language, and so on. It's probably the least known aspect of the Web Accessibility Initiative, or WAI, but it's probably the most important to make sure that all the new developments that are going on are taking account of the needs of people with disabilities. The more visible part of what the WAI group does, or the WAI part of the organisation does, is developing guidelines for implementing accessibility. And most of you here today will probably have heard of the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines. There are some other guidelines as well, which I'll come to shortly. We also work on methods for evaluating accessibility. We get involved in education and outreach. It's probably the most active, visible part of the organisation, apart from the guidelines, is the materials that the WAI group develops, or the WAI working groups, I should say, develop, because the WAI the W3C work is, as Victor said, there's only about 70 staff, but there's over 500, I think at last count it was in the thousands of people actively involved in the work, because the work is carried out through a large number of working groups with one or two staff involved, and then a whole lot of volunteers from the member organisations and from the general public who get involved and want to help develop the various standards that the W3C works on. Okay, web accessibility. A quick definition. Basically, it means that individuals with disabilities can access and use the web as effectively, maybe not as efficiently, due to their disability, but certainly as effectively as people who don't have disabilities. We all take the web for granted these days, and it's increasingly part of how we're expected to live our lives, get information, undertake business, interact with government across the world. And people with disabilities have just as much right to participate in this manner as everybody else does. So more specifically, it means that they can access the web and access information, but the web is a two-way medium, so they need to be able to interact with the web. Just about every website will have some forms for completion on it, and they need to be able to contribute to the web. We're seeing the development of a lot more interactive, where people can actually contribute actively to various aspects of the web. If you think about some of the encyclopedias on the web, they're written by the community. So everybody is expected to contribute to those aspects of that information on the web. Just putting up a diagram to outline the way accessibility interacts with people. We have all the technologies that the W3C develops, the HTML, the CSS, and so on. On top of that, we have the various accessibility guidelines. But what we're about is developing content and applications for people to use. And we have developers and authors and people who are developing that content. And we have users, the community who wants to access that information. And some of those people in the community will be using assistive technologies. In addition to using a browser. So what we need to make sure is that all this content is made available to these users in such a way that they can get the information and interact with the information in the same way that those of us who can use a mouse, can see the screen, and can use a keyboard are doing. So we rely on our authoring tools for creating this information. And the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines are probably the key set of guidelines because they say how this content should be prepared so that our users can access it. The User Agent Accessibility Guidelines are about the browser and the assistive technology, and so they're saying how this content will be interpreted for these people. And there are probably not much that most of us can do about this. Most of us rely on a browser like Firefox or Internet Explorer or Safari or something else. And most of us don't get involved in the development of those types of tools. We just take what is available to us to use. Most of us don't get involved in the development of assistive technologies, which are things like screen magnifiers, voice recognition software, so somebody who can't use their hands can talk to their computer, and things like JAWS, which actually read the contents of the page back to somebody who can't see the screen well or has difficulty with reading. Where we can make a big influence is by using an authoring tool that supports the content accessibility guidelines so that this content and the applications that we're putting on the web are created in the right way. And I'll talk a little bit more about that a little bit later on. So we really are, the authors and the developers are interacting with the users, and we do need to rely on all of these guidelines that the Web Accessibility Initiative has developed and released. As I said, really probably the key to achieving accessibility is the authoring tool itself, because most of us are using authoring tools. Very few people these days, or very few web pages these days, are developed by somebody sitting down and writing the HTML code. We're all using authoring tools of one sort or another. Large organisations will be using content management tools. Universities are using learning management systems. Smaller organisations might be using products such as Dreamweaver as an editor and development tool. Lots of other people will be contributing to the web through blogs, through wikis, through other user-generated content, such as Twitter and social networking programs that people are interacting with and putting their own content directly onto the web these days. If all of these tools were to create our content accessibly, we'd have solved most of the problem about accessibility. So it's really important when you're looking for a tool for authoring your content that you actually investigate, if you're looking at a couple, which one might be providing the best support for accessibility. If we can, as I said, if we can get this part of the triangle fixed up at the authoring side, then the users are going to have a much better chance of being able to access our information and interact with our web pages. How are the guidelines developed? The W3C and the way, well, W3C is basically the standards making body for the web. We actually call them technical recommendations internally, and they're published as technical recommendations, but they're effectively the standards. So HTML, CSS, and so on are the standards for the web. And then within the underneath that, we have the web content accessibility guidelines. Again, they're published as a technical recommendation, so they are the standard for accessibility. It developed internationally with lots of stakeholder input from all around the world, from experts in disability, from researchers, from disability organisations, from people who have been working with people with disabilities and supporting them, all coming together to contribute to say what needs to happen to make what aspects of the HTML, the CSS, the XML, and so on need to be written in a certain way in order for us to make sure that the content and the applications are going to be available to people who may need to access the information in a slightly different way. There's a formal process for public review, and the guidelines as they're developed go through progressive review stages so that we get an even wider community input and get lots of comment back to further make sure that the guidelines are A, technically correct, and B, that they're understandable by the people who are going to have to work with them. We also have an authorised translation policy, and as Victor said, we're looking forward to having lots more translations in Hungarian in the future. There's an we're working with groups all around the world to make sure that not only the HTML and the CSS, but also the accessibility standards and the supporting material to help people understand the need for accessibility are translated into as many languages as we can. Just quickly, the development process. We work through a series of public drafts. The diagram indicates many working drafts that we go through. We go through a last call working draft, which is when we think we've had all the comment back and accommodated all the feedback and all the responses. It goes through a candidate recommendation phase where we ask the community to try and implement the guidelines, and then becomes a proposed recommendation, which is effectively the last stage before it becomes a final W3C recommendation and a web standard. And it's really pleasing to be able to say at this point that the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines version 2 are at this stage, and we are very hopeful that they will become a W3C recommendation, all signed off and available for adoption before Christmas this year, before the end of 2008. It's looking very, very promising at this stage that WCAG 2, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines, will be available finally, all signed and ready to go now. So, WCAG 2. They will become the international standard for web accessibility. They are an improvement on WCAG 1 in many respects because they have much more testable requirements within them. So WCAG 1, for instance, said that you should have appropriate contrast on your pages so that people with low vision can see the important information on your page. Within WCAG 2, they have actually said specifically at two different levels what that contrast should be, so that it is becoming testable. That was part of the requirements for developing WCAG 2, was that it was much more tightly defined in terms of how people can be measured to be meeting the needs. It's technology independent, which is an advantage. There was a criticism of WCAG 1 in that it was really written for HTML, which is probably okay because they were developed back in 1998, where just about all the web was in HTML. We weren't talking about all the other languages, all the other multimedia particularly that is now on the web, and even PDF was not as common as it is. So the new WCAG 2 has been developed to be technology independent. Underpinning that technology are a lot of techniques for HTML and for CSS, and we anticipate that other developers, other vendors, will develop techniques or document techniques that will apply to their specific technologies like Flash for Silverlight, for PDF and so on. And we understand that those are in advanced stages of development within some of the organisations who are responsible for some of those other technologies that we see on the web these days. And we also expect that WCAG 2 is much more adaptable and more flexible. For instance, WCAG 1 said that if you are using scripting, it must be device independent. And then it also said, but your pages must work without any scripting on them. Scripting is allowed now within WCAG 2, and various methods are being documented to allow you to incorporate scripting within a web page that will be accessible. For most of the requirements for WCAG 2, there are several different techniques that have been documented as being sufficient techniques to meet that requirement. So you can implement in one, two, half a dozen different ways in order to meet the requirements of WCAG 2. How is it structured? It's structured under a series of high-level principles, basically saying that the web needs to be perceivable by people with disabilities, it needs to be operable by them, which means if they can't use the conventional mouse, keyboard, screen interface, it needs to be understandable, and it needs to be robust so that it will work with their assistive technologies, and hopefully it'll be working with the future technologies that people might be using. Underneath that, there are a set of guidelines, and then a set of success criteria. And those success criteria, as I said, are written device independently, and then a level underneath that, which are outside the guidelines so that they can be continually updated, are a set of techniques. At this stage, we have techniques for scripting, for CSS, and for HTML. And there's a lot of support material with WCAG 2 to help the community to implement it better. So WCAG 2 is the standard. Probably the document that would be of most interest to developers is the document How to Meet WCAG 2, where they can very quickly burrow down to the techniques, what the range of techniques are that will help them meet a particular success criteria, such as contrast, for instance. So the techniques provide the instructions for developers and with sample code for actually implementing those requirements. To help understand the need for a particular success criteria, there is a very detailed reference document. It's effectively a textbook that you can dip into to understand WCAG 2. It describes the benefits to people with disabilities. It gives some example scenarios, gives some additional resources that other people have developed, and then it cross-references back to the techniques depending on whether you're a developer or whether you're just trying to understand why a particular guideline or success criteria has been developed. So there's a lot of supporting material to understand why we have the various guidelines and success criteria and how to implement them at this stage. And that's all in place to help the community pick up WCAG 2 very quickly and implement it. Just as an illustration from the How to Meet WCAG 2 document, a particular success criteria, the contrast at the minimum level, text and images of text have a contrast ratio of at least 5:1, except if the text is pure decoration. Sufficient techniques. In situation A, the text is less than 18 point, if not bold, and less than 14 point if bold. And then there are two techniques that we can jump to. And in situation B, if it is bigger than 18 point if bold, or at least 14 point if bold, and there are two more techniques that we can jump to. And this is recognising that the bigger text is easier to see, even if the contrast ratio, if the contrast isn't as great as we might have originally thought it needed to be. We've also documented common failures, and we have a series of advisory techniques, which, if you like, might be called best practice. They're not required to directly meet the success criteria, but particularly the work that we've done with the ageing has indicated that a lot of these best practice techniques are actually going to make the web more usable by a lot of people with disabilities and a lot of people in the older age group. So this is the type of support that we have within WCAG 2. Additionally, there are benefits for the mobile community, and Marte is going to be talking about mobile web later on today, and the ageing community, which is the work that I've been working on. So with a mobile web, there's a high overlap between the requirements for mobile devices and people with disabilities. Things like resizing and reflowing, because we've got very small screens, and scrolling horizontally on a mobile device is obviously very, very difficult. If you're using a large monitor at low resolution, as a lot of people with very low vision do, they might be using a 20-inch monitor, but they still have it set at 800 by 600. Scrolling horizontally is not something that they want to do either. Use of colour and images. A lot of mobile phones don't support 65,000 colours. They support a smaller number. They're also being used in bright environments where the screen can get washed out in the sunshine and so on. So overlap again with people with low vision. Navigation and layout needs to be fairly intuitive. You've got a very small device. You're looking at it very quickly often on that device. So supporting people who may not be able to grasp quickly changes in navigation, again, on a small mobile device, you are looking for being able to quickly move across the site. And multimedia and scripting, again, can be something that is very difficult and very often not supported properly on mobile devices, depending on the device. So a big overlap between what we do for people with disabilities and what we do for mobile devices. Coming to the ageing group, demographic changes in Europe. Across Europe as a whole, by 2010, the year after next, 17% of the population will be over 65. By 2050, they're forecasting that 30% will be over 65. In some countries, this is going to be much higher. In fact, Japan, by 2010, will have 30% of their population over 65. Some countries in Europe will also be are moving as quickly as Japan is to having more people in retirement than in the workforce within a very short period of time. And with age, we get changes in our abilities, changes in our visual abilities. Our near focus reduces. People need reading glasses. You see a lot of old people reading the newspaper with a magnifying glass, for instance. Our ability to see colours, to see contrast, to differentiate with low contrast reduces, and so on. As we age, we also tend to lose our ability to hear, particularly the higher frequencies. We can develop physical disabilities. A lot of old people have arthritis, Parkinson's disease, and so on, which makes it very difficult to use a mouse and very hard to use a keyboard even sometimes. And a lot of older people are also developing cognitive impairments, short-term memory loss, distractibility, finding it hard to concentrate on something for an extended period. So a lot of these things overlap very much with people with disabilities. The WAGE project that I'm working on is an EC-funded project, European Commission-funded project, to better understand the needs of the ageing community in recognition of these changing demographics, to work with the ageing community to get them involved with the development, further development and the adoption of the web content accessibility guidelines. We're developing a range of educational materials, and I'll touch on a couple of those in a few minutes, and we're pursuing standards harmonisation. One of the things that is really important with the web is that everybody is using the same set of standards. With HTML, everybody is using HTML or maybe XML, XHTML 1.1 as the development standard. But within accessibility, and particularly within the ageing requirements, there are several other sets of recommendations around the world. The United States, for instance, had its Section 508 requirements, and the recent work to redevelop the US standards, they are adopting most of what is now in WCAG 2, so we are getting this harmonisation, and we hope that that will go through when they finalise those requirements next year. Within the ageing community, we've found that lots of people have developed independently sets of requirements for older users. And again, that means that it is hard for anybody to pick up and say, do I use this set of standards, or should I just use the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines? So we need to make sure that we are moving towards one set of standards so that developers only have to look at one set. The first part of the project, we undertook a very large literature review, and one of the things we found was that the needs of older users weren't well understood by industry or by the users themselves. And I don't know about your own knowledge or experience with older people, but I know my mum says she doesn't have a disability, she just can't see as well as she could when she was my age. This is very common. Older people often don't want to acknowledge that they have their abilities are declining. And people who are working with and supporting them, particularly people who are training them to use computers and to use the web, again, take that attitude that they don't have a disability, they just can't work as quickly or understand as well or see as well as they might have been able to when they were younger. So, for instance, people who are training older people to use the web tend not to talk about how they might increase the font size or that they might be able to use a piece of assistive technology to make life much easier for them. Maybe a different type of mouse might make life a lot easier. Or maybe they could tab through the page rather than having to try and click on the little targets that you need in a form. Often this work didn't build on previous work. We've seen in a lot of the literature that people seem to be reinventing the wheel. Even though they came to the same conclusions, a lot of it didn't reference previous work. Sometimes it reflected a lack of technical knowledge. For instance, there are several recommendations out there for developing web pages for older users that are suggesting that you shouldn't require a user to double-click. I don't know any web pages where you need to double-click. So I think that some of these people were confusing using other applications and opening the browser with actually working with the content of the web. So this is something that people are recognising that we need to work with older users and understand their needs, but then maybe they're not understanding necessarily the underlying technology that is actually the stuff that needs to be adapted for their needs. And very disappointingly, a lot of the previous work hasn't referenced or seemed unaware of the W3C, the WAI guidelines. And again, I suspect that it's because older people don't have disabilities, they just don't see, don't hear, can't move their hands as well as they could when they were younger. And there's not a recognition that disability, although in many countries when you look at the disability statistics, the people over 65 are the group that are most highly represented in many of the disability statistics across the developed world. So some of the findings. Most of the requirements identified for the elderly overlapped very significantly with those for people with disabilities. Contrast, as I said, contrast is one of the things that has been measured to decline over about our 40s, 50s. By the time you get to 80 and 90, your ability to perceive contrast is only about, I think the number is something like 30% of that of somebody in their 20s. So it is one of the things that just does deteriorate with age. The ability to see close material as clearly means that text size needs to be larger. And a lot of recommendations are saying that it should be at least 14 point. Well, the Web Content Accessibility Guidelines say don't fix the size, make it scalable, and WCAG is actually recommending that you should use the browser's default size rather than the tiny little fonts that we actually see on many websites these days. Navigation and orientation was something that was reported in a lot of the research as being potentially confusing, although there's still some debate about whether navigation should be shallow, so you only have to click three times to get to a particular part of the website. This means that you have a very wide navigation, or whether you should give people a few very clear choices and let them dig down deep. There's no clear recommendation on this, but the one thing that did come out of a lot of the research was the consistency in navigation and helping people orient themselves as to where they are on the web page, so that if they end up in the wrong place, they can see more clearly how to get back again. Link and heading identification was something that came out. One of the things with the reduction in contrast is that things like blue and black both are just dark colours to both appear as black to anybody probably over 70 years of age. Jacob Nielsen has said in the past that for good usability, people expect to see links underlined, don't just use a different colour. You see different colours used for all sorts of other reasons on the web pages. Underlining links just makes them clearer. Yes, it might not look as neat, but are you about the appearance, or are you about actually helping people to use your website? So just think about that at the end of the day. Underlined links are much more obvious. Blue links in amongst black text means that an older user may well miss the links entirely and not be able to use your website. Predictability, consistency, they're expecting things to behave predictably. How many of you have clicked on a link and suddenly you're downloading a PDF document that you weren't expecting to? I see lots of nods. If so, things like this are not what we expect to do. So predictability in how your pages behave are something that were even more important. So at the end of the day, what a lot of this is saying that the usability aspects of accessibility, particularly for older users, and particularly because a lot of them are new or newer to the web, or they're not on the web as frequently as many younger people are, that these usability aspects are particularly important for the older users. And WCAG 2 is addressing most of these needs. There are a few that we've found that we'll be making some recommendations about new techniques, probably advisory techniques, and some things that we might be looking at and saying, okay, what does this mean for the user agent or for the authoring tools? But the majority of the needs of older people are met fairly well by WCAG 2. Some of the future work then that we're working on is some revision of the existing WAI materials, the outreach materials. We're updating, for instance, the business case to emphasise the changes in demographics and the needs of older users. And we have a very small demonstration website that is going to be incorporating before and after a page that doesn't accommodate the needs of people with disabilities and older users, and then demonstrate how it might without very much change to its visual appearance, so that we can demonstrate that most of the changes can occur behind the scenes rather than actually having to change the visual design of your pages. And some new materials that we're working on involving users in web accessibility. This is a really important aspect of understanding your users, and we'll be incorporating older users in that document, and responding to organisations, because one of the ways of encouraging organisations to make their websites more accessible is to let them know that they have a problem, rather than just talking to your neighbour or to somebody that you might know and saying, had you had this problem? If you don't notify an organisation that they've got a problem, how can you really expect them to fix it? It's a project that we are inviting participation, and if any of you might be interested in participating in the project, either reviewing some of our documents or more actively, please talk to me in one of the breaks. Just a couple of older users. William is in his 80s, and he's on our work, on our task force, our steering group for this project. So it's great to have somebody who's actually experiencing some of these impairments that happen with ageing, and he's very active in speaking out and telling us some of the experiences of him and his colleagues. He actually works in an older, helping train older users. And Ada is new to computers. She only started using a computer a couple of years ago to keep in touch with her family, and now finds it, essential for communication and finding information. Thank you. I'm happy to take any questions now and talk to you, any of you, during the breaks.